All right. Hey, everybody. How you doing? It is the Rebecca Juro Show. How you doing? Good to see you. I know it's been a couple of weeks. I'm sorry about that. I apologize about last week. Long story, but suffice it to say, it had to happen, unfortunately. So anyway, we are here. It is another lovely Thursday evening here in New Jersey. Hope it is nice and warm and comfortable wherever it is you happen to be on the planet. We got some big news this week. Really huge, huge, big news. Apparently, Chad Griffin, who is, of course, as many of you know, the president of the Human Rights Campaign, is going to keynote Southern Comfort this year. Now, those of you who have been around a while, people who have been around as long as myself and others who have been in the trenches in this community for a while, you probably remember Southern Comfort. The last time an HRC president spoke there didn't work out too well. No, it didn't. But, I know. Everybody is saying, and I know, this went through my head too. Yeah, okay, all right, yeah, he's going to come, and what's he going to say now? Gee, I'm really sorry if you guys were, like, pissed off that we fucked you over. Yeah, but hang on, stay with me for a minute here, you know, because I'll tell you, I've been rethinking this, okay? At first, I have to admit, I'm probably like most people, and I was like, seriously? Is this guy for real? And you know what? You know what the scary part of this is? I think he is. I think they are. I think HRC is finally for real. I think they have finally decided it's time for us to drop this bullshit that we have been trying to perpetrate on the trans community for 30 years and just get with the program because... And I'm going to explain. I have a bunch of reasons why I believe this. I mean, I've had a lot of people criticize me. Say, oh, come on, Becky, you know, these people, they're liars. They never do anything. It's just another bullshit scheme, blah, 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 blah. You know the story. I mean, okay, and not unfair, okay? It's not unfair for people to believe that. It just isn't. Why? Because they've done these kind of things. I mean... I'm not going to sit here. I could spend 2 hours just listing all the ways in which HRC has fucked over the trans community over the last, let's say, 17 years that I've been around. Okay, so believe me when I tell you, I come to this as a skeptic. I come to this as somebody who has seen too much and experienced too much from this organization to take anything on faith. I'm sorry, but I don't believe that HRC as an organization, and I'm not talking about individuals here, but I'm talking about as an organization, I don't believe that the Human Rights Campaign deserves the benefit of the doubt here. They have given up that right. They gave up that right years ago when they specifically used the trust of the trans community when they came out and they said stuff and then just didn't do it. Okay, I'm sorry, but when you have a history of behaving in that manner, even if it was people who are no longer with the organization or whose views are no longer the controlling thrust of the organization, you have to allow that people change, organizations change, priorities change. And I think we have to allow for that. I think it is an essential part of what we are as activists, as members of the trans community, as members of a persecuted and marginalized community. I think we have to allow for the possibility, I won't go so far to say the probability, but I will say the possibility that HRC has finally decided to listen to what we've been trying to tell them for 17 fucking years plus. Longer than that, since before I was around. I mean, it really heated up back in the late 90s, okay? Back in the late 90s, we were, you got to remember how the situation, okay? I'll set the stage for you a little bit. First of all, there was virtually no trans media whatsoever except for one thing. Well, two things. There were two things that existed when I came out. One was there was a magazine. It was called Transgender Tapestry. And basically, it was a community magazine. Mostly, it was like it was run by this organization called IFGE. It published up until a couple of years ago, I think. And it was basically a few articles here and there. Mostly, it was about the community and events and things like that, and Southern Comfort, blah blah blah, those kind of things. I mean, a lot of cross-dressers mixed in. Didn't seem to be a lot of politics. This was one of these magazines where I was first coming out. And I discovered this magazine. What fascinated me was not the stuff that was in the pages, honestly. What I was fascinated by with this magazine was that each issue had this full-color picture of a trans person on the cover. And those pictures fascinated me because I had never seen anybody like that. I had never seen anybody who was a trans woman who wasn't in a porno or like dressed in like garters and underwear or, you know, like had her genitalia on display or, you know, I that's what I had grown up with. That's the only experience with trans people in the media that I had experienced up until I came out. And so then there was this magazine, and there was also one other thing. There was Gender Talk, hosted by Nancy Nangeroni and later Gordine McKenzie when she came into the show. But at the time that I'm talking about, it was Nancy, was the leader. And she had other people on the show, the amazing late Hal Fuller, a guy who was just, I could spend a whole show describing how wonderful that guy was. But, you know, really good people, good team. Ethan was part of that for a while towards the end. A lot of good people worked with that show. It was a wonderful show. That was one of the ways I discovered a lot of what was going on in the community, because Nancy would interview these people and have them on the show. And so I would listen to it, and there were like dozens and dozens and dozens of interviews, and they were all archived online. I spent weeks listening to those. And, you know, here's the thing. I mean, you see what I do today, right? You see where I'm sitting in front of this microphone, yak, yak, yakking at you. Okay, where do you think I got the bug? Seriously. Yeah, I got it from Nancy because I kept listening to Gender Talk and I said, I want to do that. That's what I want to do. I want to do what she's doing. You know, I mean, I wanted to write too. And that was an important part of it. I consider myself a writer. But I wanted to do this. This is what this is my heart, what I'm doing here now. I love writing. I love doing it, and I love it. And writing is also my heart, but it's a different part of my heart. This is my passion, this show. I mean, I've been doing this for, God, it's been 12 fucking years I've been doing this. Okay, I mean, there was like a year or two on in the middle there where I wasn't doing anything because it was like between the show that I stopped doing with Marty Abernathy and then started working with Ethan St. Pierre. And then I stopped doing that, and I started doing a solo show. And there were periods in between where I wasn't doing anything. But basically, almost continuously, with maybe a year's worth of gap interspersed, I've been doing this shit for 12 years. That's a long time, yeah. But that's where I got the bug. That's where I got the bug. So anyway, getting back to my original point, because I'm getting off on a tangent here. This is what was available for the trans community in terms of media at that time. Okay, and I've written about this before. My bosses know. I've written about this on the website. At the time, The Advocate, who I write for today, was not trans-friendly. It was not trans-inclusive. It was not trans-anything except maybe trans-mocking and trans-insulting from time to time. I mean, nobody took us seriously, okay? We had to fight for every inch that we got. Getting us into the media, the only way that we got on the radio, the only way we were talked about on the radio, aside from on Gender Talk, was when one of us would call in and say, hey, no, I want to talk about this. And that's what I started doing for a while. I would call into these radio shows and say, no, I'm a transgender person. Let me talk to you about my shit. No, not gay, not lesbian. No. I want you to talk about this. And you know what? Didn't always work, but sometimes it did. And so that was the stage. That was where we were at that time. And as time goes on, you start to say to yourself, what's going on? So in other words, basically the gay male dominated culture, because at that point it still was. Yes, there were lesbians. There was a lesbian as president of the Human Rights Campaign. A few of you may remember her. Her name was Elizabeth Birch. Yeah, a real shining example of inclusion she was, huh? Yeah, oh gosh, what an icon of community solidarity that woman is. Good God. But in any case, this is the woman who famously said that trans people would be included in ENDA over her dead body. Yes, she actually did say that. Yes, she did. So it's kind of amazing, okay? We've been fighting these people, and nobody has fought them harder. I mean, you could read. Go back and read some of the shit that I wrote about these people back in the 2007, where I first started writing for the Bellerico Project. Back in 2006, 2007, I was shredding them on a daily basis, practically. And they deserved every word of it. Because that's what they were doing at that time. They didn't figure that we mattered. They just didn't. But guess what? Something happened between now and then. Or I should say maybe between then and now. Something happened. Laverne Cox happened. Janet Mock happened. Parker happened. I happened. Mitch Calloway happened. Aaron Rook. And stuff started to happen. Doors started to open. And now, HRC, I believe, okay, because, people are saying, HRC, it's all self-serving, it's all to help themselves, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know what? Here's the thing. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Okay, HRC's first concern, primary concern, any corporation, every organization, any entity, their first concern has to be, their own survival. Because if they do not survive, then they don't do anything. Then it's all for nothing. So any smart organization is going to prioritize their own existence. Now, let's just accept that as a given. The HRC says, in order to do the work we want to do, we have to survive long enough in order to do it. Well, back when they were screwing over trans folks in the zero zeros, the aughts, whatever you want to call that decade between 2000 and 2009, that's what, that's what they were doing. And so we had to say, we're going to fight you. And so that's what we did. Because that's what we did. And we lost, and we lost, and we lost, and we lost. And then all of a sudden, the marriage thing started to build on that. And then you started to see states like New York and New Hampshire. They're like, well, we're all about the gays, but, we're not going to bother to protect those trans folks. And you saw the silence from the Human Rights Campaign and other organizations because they were too busy. Oh, my God, we might screw up the marriage thing. We might screw up our own shit, so we're just going to say nothing. Well, you know what? When you do that, and you do it long enough and often enough and publicly enough, people notice. And I think what has happened now is HRC has come to realize that if they want to be part of the modern American LGBT civil rights movement, if they want to continue being leaders in this community, and I mean the greater LGBT community, because they don't lead anybody in the trans community right now. They have no credibility whatsoever with trans folks. Nobody trusts them. Nobody believes they're on their side. Everybody believes at this point that it's just a matter of waiting for the other shoe to drop. That, oh, yeah, Chad will go out and he'll say nice stuff and everybody will be happy. And then they'll turn around and fuck us over just like they did last time. You see, that's the problem with the human rights campaign. Because when you accuse them of something with a normal organization, you can say, oh, come on, they would never do that. And then, but with HRC, you can say, no, they already did. You see, they did that to us 5 years ago. They did that to us 7 years ago. They did that to us 9 years ago. So the problem is that everybody's worst fears about this organization have already been realized. Well, that's a pretty big hole to dig out of. And so I give credit to the Human Rights Campaign and to Chad Griffin for being willing to go into the lion's den to stand up and for another crowd of trans people and speak. Now, what I want to see, what I think we are entitled to see, is they do not come empty-handed. I was talking with somebody else today, with a fellow trans woman. And I was talking to her, and we were talking, and I said something to her. I said, if Chad, and by Chad, by extension, HRC, shows up at SoCo empty-handed, in other words, goes before this crowd and says, okay, we're not going to do that stuff anymore. Trust us. We're on your side. Nobody will believe it. Nobody. I won't believe it. Because, you know what? That tells you something. And what it tells you is that they're not taking it seriously. And that's the problem with HRC has always been, is there's been a lack of trust because, well, every time that they've asked us to trust them, they fucked us over. And not only have they made it a point to fuck us over, well, not a point, but they've just done it whenever it was convenient, but every time we used to find out the same things. Well, HRC is saying one thing. Oh, but wait, when we talk to somebody who's on the ground, oh, what do you know? It's a completely different story. Seriously. When HRC said they were fully trans-inclusive and they would never support a bill that wasn't trans-inclusive, but then we go and lobby Congress in 2004 and we find out, oh, yeah, that's pretty much exactly what HRC is doing. And as far as we know, they're not on board with your trans-inclusion. You know, it's like that was the first time. I actually broke that story. I went public with that when we got back from lobbying Congress in April 2004. There's actually a profile picture, my picture on my profile I posted this week, taken from that first protest. And the thing is, you know, then they would go and they would say something else. When Donna Rose was with them, she was on their board, and they decided to fuck over the trans community when they said, we will neither oppose nor support a trans-inclusive ENDA, which, of course, was bullshit political doublespeak for what we really mean is we're okay with fucking you over even now, even though we promised and swore up and down that we wouldn't. I mean, that's what it was about, okay? And then they send fucking Salmonese out there, and, I you know, here's another thing. I said this to the same person recently, when we were having a conversation about HRC. And I said, you know, when HRC sent Joe Salmonese to Southern Comfort, it was either one of two situations is possible. Only one of two, okay? Could not be any other. either A, Salmanis went there and stood before that audience knowing full well he was lying to them, or B, he went there fully believing everything that he said, and when he got back to Washington, the HRC executive board said, well, we don't give a shit what you told them. We're going to fuck them over anyway. Well, which is worse? The guy you can't trust who's no longer there? Or the executive board you can't trust that still has one out of 50 trans people? And furthermore, a trans person who never seems to do anything or say anything or criticize anything and thinks that the HRC walks on water. But, you know, I mean, it would be nice if like, we saw Megan Stabler, like, I don't know, do something now and then, something, anything. I mean, it seems like the only time she ever opens her mouth is to, like, say how wonderful HRC is. Well, you know, we get that you like HRC, but, you know, maybe you could, I don't know, do something constructive, maybe, instead of patting everybody on the back. I mean, is that what you are, like, now the official trans hostess or something? I don't get that. I don't get what her whole role is there. Because, I mean, it doesn't seem like she has any authority whatsoever. It doesn't seem like she has any credibility with the community. And you know, when you're one out of 50, I don't see how that's credible representation. I'm sorry, I just don't. I mean, to me, one out of 50, I'm sorry. That's tokenism, friends. And I think they have work to do there. I think they need to put some more trans people on their board. And I'll tell you something else. Here's what I would recommend. I mean, if I was, you know, in control of HRC for a day. Yeah. Can you imagine that? Oh, my God. but if I was in control, if I could wave a magic wand and restructure HRC the way I would have them be, here's what I would do. I would say, okay, major donors, you get a vote. You have your own group. It's over here. You get a vote. Each of you get a vote. This is your group. You are the major donors. Now, over here, here's our working board. The one that we fill up with activists. The people who are on the ground doing the work. Not the people writing the checkbooks. But the people who are actually implementing how that money is spent on the ground. Don't, in other words, separate the funders from the activists. Because you're not, I'm sorry, you're not. And I know there's going to be a lot of people at HRC who gasp when I say this, especially the people in the upper floor offices. But you know what? Being an activist, I'm sorry, is more than writing a check. It's more than showing up for a meeting. It's more than donating money. It has to be more than that. And when you're writing a check because the only people you give a shit about are yourselves and your friends, and you're basically saying, we want our money to only go to the issues that impact us directly, i.e. marriage, okay? No, I'm sorry, but you know what? An organization that is defined like that does not get the credibility of the working class because it doesn't deserve that level of credibility. What I'm saying is yeah, okay, the way I would do it, you folks, the major funders, you get your own group. You get to decide what you want. Your priorities are heard. They are respected. But they are not the only priorities that are considered. Over here, in this group, this other group, we have the working class. We have the activists on the ground. We have the Allison Van Kuykens and the Hayden Moras and all the folks who are on the ground doing the work, who are implementing the policies, who are saying, here's what we're doing and here's what we need. That's what we need. We need the activists. We need the people who are doing the work, who are on the ground, to be represented fairly and equally in the administration and decision-making process. That's step number one. That's the first thing I would do. You want the money spent correctly. You want it done with an eye and with a sensitivity to the issues and the what trans people are looking for. Well, then you got to involve trans people in that decision-making process, and they have to have a vote, and it has to be a real vote, not a token vote, not a token representation. You know what? I wish somebody at HRC, I wish a whole bunch of somebody's at HRC in the upper floors would go and take a look at what GLAAD is doing. GLAAD put a trans chair in their organization. They put, what was it, four other trans members on their board? That's representation. I may not agree with everything that GLAAD does. I don't agree with everything any organization does. But I respect that they're going out of their way to make sure that trans people are both an effective, important, and key word here, visible part of the decision-making process. And this is one of the things that has made me crazy about the Human Rights Campaign for the last year. Here they are, they're hiring people left and right. I mean, I thought it was just Allison Van Kuyken and Hayden Mora. No, in reality, there's a lot more. Okay, there's a whole group of trans staffers at HRC. But you know what? You've never heard of half of them. Why? Because nobody knows who they are. Because HRC doesn't promote them. This is what I don't understand. We complain about this like crazy for years. And we call you out on this stuff for years. And then you finally do something about it. But you don't tell anyone. This I have trouble understanding. And I'll tell you the truth. I think what they need is Andrea is awesome. Allison is awesome. I think Hayden is awesome. Jay Brown, I used to have actually exchanged emails with him back in the day, way back in the day. He's back at HRC. He's awesome. Somebody I just met today, another HRC staffer who I kind of has established contact with, she's awesome. I mean, there are a lot of great trans folks who are now working at the Human Rights Campaign. This is a great thing. This is an important thing. It is a positive thing. It is a thing that we should be exploring. And I'll tell you what, I am working on right now, and this will probably happen, I expect most likely, more likely than not, this will happen September, October, somewhere around there, more than likely. I'm working on getting some of those folks on the show because I want you to meet them. I want you to see these are some pretty incredible people. I met Allison Van Kuyken at Netroots. I also met another guy, Lou Weaver, who is, he's on the Board of Governors. He's not actually an HRC staffer. But, I mean, they have all these great trans folks who are working with the organization. And it's like, I said to, you know, it's funny, because I think I said this on the show last week. I said to Allison when I first met her, why don't I know about you? Why am I meeting you for the first time? Why? You know, why haven't I heard about you? I mean, for God's sakes, I've been doing this work for 15 years, close to it. I keep track of this stuff, and I've been paying attention for a long time, and I've never heard of you. Why is that? See, and that to me it makes no sense. So, putting this back in the context of Chad Griffin and HRC and going to SoCo, I think what has to have happened now is for HRC has finally said, you know what? It's time. It's time to say, we're getting with the program. You know, I remarked to somebody else today. I said, you know, I've been around and been intimately involved with this on one side of this conflict, the HRC trans conflict, for so long that I notice when we're winning. I don't think too many of our fellow trans folks have, though. We are winning. We are winning. We complain that they're not hiring trans folks. They're hiring trans folks, and good ones. That's the key right there. It's not just about hiring trans folks. It's about hiring good trans folks. And they are. And I think, okay, now also, you know what else it is? It's also about, we complain bitterly that HRC rarely, if ever, focuses on the issues of the working class. Well, they've been, you know, and granted, it's the beginning. I haven't seen a lot of this, but they've been doing some work around transgender violence, which is great. I have no insider information on this whatsoever. My contacts at HRC have provided me with exactly nothing. Okay, I know as much as you do as far as this speech goes. But I will say this. I don't believe that if HRC was full of crap, in other words, if this was another bullshit Joe Salmanis routine, I don't believe HRC would be sending Chad to SoCo. I just don't. I just don't. I don't believe HRC whatever our complaints have been over the years with this organization, one thing they have always been is very slick with the PR and the media and media management and image management and those kind of things. They've always been very careful with that kind of thing. I don't believe that the human rights campaign that I know, the one that we've been fighting for almost 20 years, or in some of the cases more than that, okay, I don't believe that that organization would be sending its president to the largest gathering of transgender people in the country if they didn't have something worthwhile to say. Because follow me here now. HRC's reputation with the trans community is mud. Okay? I think John Boehner and Louis Gohmert probably have a better reputation with the trans community than HRC. I mean, you know, okay, maybe that's a bit much, but you get the idea. So, I don't think it's not, I mean, let's put it this way, it can't get much lower than it already is. It's only got one direction to go, and that's up. So HRC has nothing to lose. Well, yeah, they have nothing to lose. Okay, in other words, why do it if you don't care? Do you know what I mean? If you're not trying to win over trans folks, if you're not trying to make amends, if you're not trying to reestablish connections and build coalitions and all that good stuff, if that's really not what you're trying to do here, why bother at all? I mean, we all hate you. Or at least, well, you know, hate's too strong a word, but you know what I mean. Okay? I mean, it's like it would make no sense. It would be a waste of time and effort for HRC to go down to SoCo and say something like, well, we're not going to do that bad stuff anymore. You can have faith in us. We're going to fight for you from now on, which was basically what Joe Salmanis did. Okay? Nobody will believe it. Never. Not for one split second. Okay? They might have if we hadn't seen what happened in 2007. But you know what? They no longer get that benefit of the doubt. And you know what? Chad knows it. Their upper management knows it. There's no doubt of that. Okay? You may disagree with their politics, but these people are not stupid. They are not fools. Okay? They are brilliant people in a lot of ways. Very smart. I know several of them. These people did not get to the positions that they are by being idiots. Okay, they know what they're doing. And that's a double-edged sword. Because when you're that smart and you're that good at what you do, then when you do the bad thing, we know you know better. And we can say, well, we know you can do better because we know you know better. And these folks know better. And they've known better. They knew better 10 years ago and 20 years ago. They made choices. So maybe now they're making different choices. Because what they see is the trans community is now, we are the cultural icons. We are in the news. We are on the cover of Time magazine. We are on the cover of The Advocate. We are on your local news. We are on cable news. We are in the movies. We are everywhere. And the most popular meme, the most popular narrative about the human rights campaign is that they're anti-transgender, is that all they care about is marriage for rich white gay people. That is still the primary narrative about this organization. And you know what? It is becoming less and less tolerable. For as the community becomes more inclusive and more progressive, people are saying, you know what, I don't want to work with people like that. I've heard of organizations that even this year have returned money to the HRC, have voted to return checks to the Human Rights Campaign because they're not comfortable taking their money. Now that says something. That people despise you so much they won't even spend your money when you offer it to them for free? Okay, that tells you about the level of distrust and animosity and the depth of it. That's a big hole to dig out of. And that's why I say Chad better come with a very, very large ladder. Okay, he needs to come out onto that stage and say, we're not doing it anymore. We're sorry. We fucked up. And here's what we're going to do now. Here's what we learned. Here's why we're not going to do it anymore. And here's how we're going to behave instead. Hold us accountable. They need to come with something. If they show up at this thing empty-handed, it's just not going to happen. People will just turn around and say, this is bullshit. This is a lie. We don't believe you. I mean, they know this. I mean, they don't need me to tell them this. They don't. They do not need me to tell you this, to tell them this. It's not going to fly. They have to come and say, okay, here's how we're going to make it right. They have to acknowledge. Now, you know, it's funny. I was talking to the same person I've been referring to, and she said something about that some people have called for reparations, which is utter bullshit. I mean, anybody who's calling for reparations to the trans community for the HRC bullshit, you know what? Get over yourselves, okay? It ain't going to happen, okay? It's just not, okay? You know what kind of reparations I want to see? I want to see three things. I want to see money. I want to see woman power, as in woman and man power. I want to see political capital. I want to see those three things, okay? Those are the kind of reparations we need. Fight for our rights, spend money, invest in trans rights, invest in building a team that focuses on the issue and promotes it to the rest of America, you know, like you did for marriage, okay? That's what I want to see. Start taking on trans issues with the same kind of intensity and willing to invest that you do with marriage. Because until you do, you're never going to be taken seriously because there's always going to be this elephant in the room that says, yeah, 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 okay, so you spent a little bit here and you spent a little bit there. Oh, but look over here. You spent six times on one state's marriage efforts than you did in an entire annual year budget fighting for trans rights. I mean, that's what's going to happen. Because believe me when I tell you, people will check up on this stuff. If you want to be taken seriously, if HRC wants to be taken seriously, they need to make a major investment in time, in money, in political capital, and they need to show results. I mean, they have to. If they don't, it's not going to matter because nobody will trust them. Let's see, you know, I mean, we see so much around marriage. Let's see if HRC, let's see them make those big, expensive, full-color ads like they do for marriage. Let's see the advertising campaigns. Let's see the, questioning of politicians. Let's see what we've seen. We know what the human rights campaign is capable of. We've seen it around marriage for a decade. The way to impress the trans community, and I'll give them this for free, the way to impress the trans community, the way to get people to go, wait a minute, well, now this looks interesting, maybe we should hold off judgment. The way to get that kind of reaction, start going after trans rights and equality in the workplace for working class folks with the same intensity you do for marriage. If you backburner it, if you say, well, we're focusing on marriage, but we're also going to do this other project kind of bullshit. If we get into that, if we get into the, well, you're not really a headliner, what we're really about most is marriage, you know, which is basically what they've been doing for the last 10 years. That's not going to fly. Because that says to people right there, what that says is, well, we're pretty much doing the same thing we were doing before. That's what it says. You know, it is. That's what it says. And I think it's unfortunate if that's what happens. But I also think they have an opportunity here. I think HRC has a clear opportunity to show their stuff, to say, no, 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 things are different now. Let us prove it to you. But I think it has to be concluded, that last sentence. Let us prove it to you. Because nobody's going to take it on faith. Nobody's going to believe these people. They have lost their right to the benefit of the doubt. This much we know. This much we know. And you know what? I hope they do. I hope they do. You know, because I'll talk about this a little bit. But before I do, I have to visit the little girl's room. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a clip. This is a little bit of... Unfortunately, I've been waiting to try and get some songs recorded here, but I've been so busy. I haven't been able to upload anything in a while. I'm going to play a clip. This is from our Lucas Goonley interview back in July. I'm going to let this play for a couple of minutes, and then I will be back. I may interrupt it in the middle. So if you happen to get into it and I turn it off on you, I apologize for that. It is a 24-minute interview. You're probably only going to get to hear about 5 minutes of it. But the show is available online, so if you like this interview and you do want to hear the rest of it, it is available for you to download at the Blog Talk Radio site. Just go to my site, R. Giro Show, Rebecca Giro Show. Just find me, look me up. The show is there. So I'll give you a little taste of this while I... step out of the room for a couple of minutes and take care of business, and we will be back. And when I come back, we'll talk a little bit more about this because I have more to say. All right? I'll see you in a couple.
Okay, hey everyone, we are back and we are talking to the editorial director of Hear Media, which is the parent company of TheAdvocate.com and The Advocate magazine, and not incidentally, my boss. So, hey Lucas, how you doing?
Hello, how you doing?
Glad to have you. Thanks so much for coming on the show. A few stories I wanted to get to with you. We're going to talk some hot topics today. First topic I wanted to get to with you was the particularly hot topic is the President Obama just the other day announced that he is going to sign two new executive orders, one which adds gender identity to the original executive order signed by President Bill Clinton that protects up until now, gay and lesbian folks, now including transgender folks, from discrimination in federal employment, and also one that will protect LGBT workers at federal contractors making $10,000 a year or more. Let's talk specifically about how do you think that these are gonna is this as big a deal, do you think, as the community is making it? Is this a game changer in your opinion politically?
It's a big deal to the LGBT community who's been pushing for the executive order for federal contractors since probably before he was even in office. I think it was one of his campaign promises that he was pushed on to meet after he got into office and then didn't, because he was saying he really wanted to push through Congress the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, and he thought passing an executive order might sort of derail that a bit. Then Congress, you know, didn't do anything. The Senate passed ENDA. The House refuses to take it up, and he's left, like he is in a lot of issues, wondering, okay, well, I'm going to have to act on my own, and he likes to say that now all the time. So LGBT people and the human rights campaign, lots of organizations were pushing for the executive order for a very long time and were pleased when it finally happened in his, you know, second term. So, yeah, I think it's a big deal to them. It will be a big deal to the workers who are contractors for the government, because for the first time they can rest assured that they can't be fired for their sexual orientation or gender identity at places even including ExxonMobil, which is sort of notorious for every year having its shareholders meet and vote against its own anti-discrimination policy.
Absolutely.
So for all those people it'll be important.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's so interesting because over the last several years, since President Obama has been in office, one of the criticisms that I've leveled and others have leveled is that, he says the right things, but it seems like it takes a really long time. Do you think that, and I've floated this opinion before, but I wonder if you agree, that there's the timing of this, which happens to be, roughly 6 months, or well, 5.5 months before the midterm elections. Do you think that that was pre-planned, or was this just a matter of, well, this is when they finally got around to it?
I think it was pre-planned in the sense that President Obama is repeatedly hitting on this idea that he has to take executive action because Congress is being useless and not passing any bills. So I think in that sense this fits into his overall narrative that he is sort of playing up. And, you know, John Boehner's just playing into it with suing him for taking too many executive actions. So they like pushing that. In terms of, like, how long it took them to come to the conclusion that Congress wasn't going to act on ENDA, it's hard to say that they, whether or not they planned it that way. I think all along they were consistent in saying that they wanted to emphasize ENDA. Then when it looked like that wasn't happening, they switched to this other idea. They could have switched to this other idea at any point in time. Their case was that if you did that, it may have slowed down progress in Congress. Unfortunately, Congress didn't do anything. So the point is sort of moot, right? So for the last five, almost 6 years now, there have been no protections for these federal contractors. That's not without consequence for all those people. In the end, though, the
All right, we're back. Hey, how you doing? I am back. It is the Rebecca Juro Show, and thanks for sticking around. Now, I have to say, I'm impressed with the Human Rights Campaign over the last several months. I really am. And those of you who listen to the show on a regular basis, you know that I am not somebody who shies away from critiquing these people at all, ever, under any circumstances. I owe them nothing. I give them no benefit of the doubt. And yet, I'm unwilling to shut the door. And this gets me a lot of flack from a lot of people who say, oh, yeah, I'm a gay incorporated sellout and all this crap. You know, I'm sorry, I don't buy it. Here's the thing. I don't believe that we should ever, as activists, ever say, that's it, they're unredeemable. Never happened, forget it. I mean, we've seen people who, not in a million years, Exodus International, remember that one? The one where they were the ex-gay group, where the leader came out and said, this was all wrong, I was terrible, I apologize to the gay and lesbian community, blah, blah, blah. Okay, nobody is completely irredeemable. Even if sometimes there are certain people who you might say, well, maybe they're redeemable, but boy, it would sure take a hell of a lot for them to be redeemed. People I'm thinking of like a certain former HRC president immediately leaps to mind on that one. In fact, at least two different former HRC presidents immediately leap to mind in that score. Maybe three if you count Cheryl Jakes, although she was such a non-entity, I don't even count her, really. Because she was just, as far as I could tell at the time, she was a parrot for the executive board. She really had no individual interest. I mean, she had no skill as an activist leader. The woman was a politician, and she acted like a politician. And unfortunately, at the time, HRC was too clueless. She's gay and she's a Democrat, so let's put her in charge. Which, to me, is kind of like saying, here's a person with a car, let's put them in the Indy 500. You know, I mean, it's like, it makes no sense. It really doesn't. But at the same time, you know, I cannot help knowing, because I've seen this, and because I've met a lot of the folks that are involved here, and I know how good they are, that in HRC, which really prioritized and focused and said, we're going to do this, we are going to bring trans rights up to a level where gay rights are, we are going to make this a priority. No matter what our executive board says, no matter how many times we hear marriage, 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 no matter how many times the politicians complain, that we are going to prioritize and we will not be willing to sell out the little guy. That this is no longer an option, ever, under any circumstances, ever, ever, ever. That we are going to hire trans people. We are going to promote trans people. We are going to put trans people into the leadership of this organization. We are going to prioritize the issues that matter to trans people and to the working class in particular. And we are not, most importantly, we are not going to let marriage overshadow that. We are not going to issue stupid press releases that say our new advocacy goal is to win marriage in all 50 states. I mean, I couldn't believe it when they did that, which was, I mean, this was only a few months ago. And it was like, you people really just don't get it, do you? I mean, when HRC or an organization like that says something like that, what they're really saying is, this is what we care about. This is our primary cause. This is what we care about most, and everything else comes secondary. Well, trans people read that, and not unreasonably given the history, as, fuck you, trans people, we're still all about ourselves. We don't give a fuck whether you live or die. That's what it says. Now, that may not be true. It may not be their intent. It may not be the way they wish to be perceived. But that is the message people, or trans people in particular, are going to take. When they say, what our main issue, our key thing that we want to get you to donate money on is marriage in all 50 states, that's exactly the message that it sends. When they have a staffer who they send out to run a rally on the steps of the Supreme Court, who is so ignorant and so untrained and so unfamiliar with the issues of trans people and with trans people ourselves, that she could say something so stunningly ignorant as marriage is not a transgender issue, an attempt to block the transgender flag? This is the person you're sending out to represent your organization to the public? I mean, maybe if more trans folks were employed then, a year ago, well, a year and a couple of months ago, maybe they wouldn't be doing stupid shit like that. Maybe they're the people that they go out and entrust with these kind of jobs as middle managers would have a fucking clue as to what they're doing. And you see, that's the problem, is because, you know, ignorance. I mean, HRC is the wealthiest, best-resourced LGBT civil rights organization in the country. Are you telling me they can't do a few trainings for their staff on transgender issues? I mean, is that really what they're telling us? That they deprioritized our stuff for so long that they don't even bother to give their field operatives the most basic understanding of who trans people are, how to talk to us, how to interact with us, what we're about? I mean, are they really okay with people representing them who are that ignorant? You know what? I don't think so. I don't think they are. I really don't. And I think what I think, and this is absolutely, totally supposition on my part. Let me make that clear. I have not spoken to anybody. I have not. This is strictly on me, my opinion. I think that flag thing, I think it was a wake-up call for them because they look like shit. People like me raked them over the coals for that, and rightly so. Because first, they screwed up royally. Second, they did it in front of witnesses, very, very credible witnesses. Third of all, then they went and denied it, claimed that it never happened. No one would ever do something like that, which everybody knew was a lie, because they have done stuff like that. I've been there personally when it's happened to me. I mean, not this particular incident. But I've been harassed by Human Rights Campaign staffers in the past. I think it was 2006. I was at New York Pride. And they used to, now I don't know if they still do this, but when I was at New York Pride that year, They used to, all the HRC staffers, we call the clipboard drones, you know, the people who come with the clipboard, please sign up for HRC, you know, the sweet, fresh-faced little girls with the little nice little hair and the, you know, the sweet faces come up to you. Would you like to donate to the Human Rights Campaign? You know, those folks, you know, and they also had these big, big, burly gay guys, you know, and they would, like, chase us around, like, as if we were, like, street scum that they had to clear away from their booth. I mean, seriously, to the point where I had this one guy chasing me through New York Pride. Why? Because I was wearing a transsexual menace T-shirt, and I was handing out flyers, and they were anti-HRC flyers. They didn't like that very much. This guy chased me around the festival, and then I finally said, you know what? Fuck this. I went straight to a cop and said to the cop, this man is harassing me. I'm in fear for my physical safety. And I was, okay, because he was going right on top of me. And then, after that day, then I let the cops handle it. I disappeared. I let the cops handle it. Then I went home that night, and I wrote to somebody who no longer works with HRC. Her name is Winnie Stackelberg. And I wrote to Winnie. At that time, she was, I'm not sure what she was, political director or something. I don't remember. It was, I mean, she wasn't in charge of these people, but I wrote to her because I had her contact information. I said to her, look, I said, you know, we have different agendas. We're going to come into conflict. These people, this guy threatened my physical safety. That changes the rules. If this happens again, I will go public and I will make this a very, very, very big deal, using as much of the media reach that I have at my disposal to make sure that everybody knows about this. Right now, I'm gonna, you know, and I did. I mean, I went back to my group, transsexual menace list that I was on, and I told everybody on there what was going on and what happened. Okay, so this is 2006. Okay. This then I 2011 I went to an HRC gala in New York at the Waldorf as press for the Balearica project. I had a press pass and the whole nine yards. And I got this one guy who decided he was going to be my personal policeman for the evening. And he followed me around. He made me leave. You know, I was trying to record stuff. He made me get up. He was, like, giving me a hard time. And nobody else. I mean, everybody else, all the other media people he never talked to, he never gave any. They were all set up around me. Nobody didn't say anything. The only person he wanted to harass was me. And, gee, was it a coincidence that I was the only trans person up there? You know what? I don't think so. He singled me out. To the point where I finally said, you know what? Fuck this. And I left early. I should have stayed. I wanted to stay a lot longer, but I wouldn't because this guy was harassing me. And, you know, everything I did, every time I moved, if I wanted to go to the bathroom, it was just right behind me, breathing down my neck. You know, and it was like, this is unacceptable. Why am I being singled out? Yeah, here goes the CNN camera guy. I don't see you harassing him. There goes the reporters from 47 other local area things. I don't see you harassing them. No, only the trans woman. I mean, I was literally singled out by this staffer. Now, this I should point out, this was a single staffer. This was not the organizational policy, okay? The two guys who had invited me, their names... Fred Sains, who, of course, is the vice president of communications over at HRC, and the guy who was the communications director there at the time, Michael Cole Schwartz. Both of those guys were wonderful, very hospitable, no issues with them whatsoever. They were absolutely wonderful. They were terrific hosts. But this one guy apparently didn't get the memo that, you know, I'm pressed and I should be treated like everyone else. And so I went back and I reported what I saw. I made it a policy that when I got that job, that I said, you know what? I'm not going to go. This is not a I want to bash HRC for shit that happened years ago article. I'm going to go to this thing, And I'm going to report what I see and what I hear at this event. That's what this article is going to be about. It's not going to be about shit that happened in 2007. It's not going to be about shit that happened in 2004 or the 90s or whatever. It's going to be about what happened this time, this night. And that's what I wrote. And if you want to dig this out, it's on the Bellerico Project. It's called Into the Lion's Den. I wrote that. That was 2011. Now, at the same time, yeah, I don't hesitate to report when HRC fucks up. But I've also tried to make it a policy to report just as quickly and just as enthusiastically when HRC does the right thing. When HRC, when they do something, it's like, hey, check this out. They're doing good stuff. Okay? When they hire somebody like Allison Van Kuyken or Lou Weaver, or, well, he's not hired, but he's part of the organization, or Hayden Mora or any of these other folks who are trans and are, you know, I want to laud that. I want to say, hey, this is exactly, we asked you to do this and you're doing it. Great. Bravo. Kudos. But that's part of the problem. How do we know? How can we say bravo and kudos when they don't tell us? When you have to discover this by yourself? I mean, the only one who I knew about before I went to Netroots Nation was Hayden Mora, who we had had contact previous to that. And so my question, as I said earlier at the top of the show, my question to Allison when I met her at Netroots was, why don't I know about you? She's awesome. I mean, and she's a great activist. And I guess, you know, now she's a friend because, you know, we talk. We're going to probably, she's moving to the East Coast. So I guess we're going to hopefully see each other more often. I may be heading down to D.C. shortly for a weekend or few days coming up soon, so who knows what happens there. Hopefully we'll get together and get to meet some of these folks and get to hang out with them, get to know them a little better, because I want to know. I think you should know. I think it's, you know, we complain, and rightly so, when it's justified. But we should also say, let's celebrate. Well, I don't know, maybe celebrate is too strong of a word, but we should appreciate, we should be aware and say, hey, you know, HRC did the right thing here. They're doing the right thing. Hey, nice job. More, please. Well, how can you do that if we don't know that these folks are out there? And that's the thing. And this is what I keep coming back to on this. And I'm going to, we'll go on to some other stories because I've talked about this for over an hour now. But here's the thing. I want to just throw this out there for consideration. HRC, as a real ally of the trans community, in other words, as an ally that the trans community could honestly, truly know, trust, has their back, has our back, that when we need them and we say, hey, HRC, we need you in New York. Hey, HRC, we need you in New Hampshire. Hey, HRC, we need you in New York City to fight for our birth certificates. Hey, HRC, we need you in Congress to say, we need these protections now, today. Not when it's politically convenient for Barack Obama. Not when it's politically convenient for Nancy Pelosi. We need you to be the ones who say, no, we're done waiting. We need you not to be the supplicants. We need you to be activists now. We need you to be representing. As the kids say, you need to represent. And you can't do that if all you're talking about is marriage. You just can't. Yeah, and you can't just be talking. See, that's the problem. And I think HRC has gotten into a habit over the years of saying things like, well, we'll say some nice things and we'll be supportive, and then we'll just go back and do whatever we do. Nobody will notice. Nobody will care. Well, guess what? I think they finally come to understand, guess what? People do notice, and they do care. And you're going to pay for it. You're going to pay for it politically. I told this story recently. I have somebody who's a young person come to me, 20 years old. Really doesn't, is not, is a young lesbian. Doesn't, isn't really a trans person. Came to me, and this is somebody who's in college, you know, and she comes to me and she says, can I ask you a question? I said, sure. It's like about being trans. I said, sure. What do you want to know? I figured it was something about hormones or something, or, you know, what it's like to live or whatever. You know what I mean? No. You know what it was? She asked me, why does everybody hate the human rights campaign? Now, bear in mind, this is a 20-year-old college student. All she knew about the human rights campaign was that everybody hated them. That all her friends and her community members that she knew hated this organization and did not hesitate to express that. Well, that's the thing, okay? That's the view that these young queers are coming up with, that they're being, well, I hate to use this word, but it's the truth, that they're being indoctrinated with, that folks who are the older, the next generation of activists, are saying, let us teach you, let us show you who to trust, who can be trusted and who cannot. And HRC is on the cannot be trusted list. They are, they have been, and unless they do something, something big, something earth-shattering, something that is going to get a lot of media attention, it's the way they're going to continue to be. Because you know what? They have a reputation right now about trans folks that took them 30 years to build. It's not going to take you a few months to dig out of that. It's just not. And so that's the thing. You know, they need to do this. They need to do this in order to stay relevant, because that's the problem. If they don't do this, and this is what I try to explain to people, if they don't do this, if they don't get on board with trans inclusion, if they don't become a leader, not only just get on board, but become a leader on this issue, they will continue to lose relevance and donations, because they're all, as people come into the movement and younger folks come into it and older folks leave it and retire, it's becoming more and more a basic. There is no longer any question as to whether the bulk of the community supports trans inclusion. The question is why would we support any organization that didn't? And that's what I think HRC is starting to confront, that they're losing support. That people are saying, you know, I have this money and I'm a rich person and I want to donate to the cause, but, well, I'm not comfortable donating to the human rights campaign because of your reputation. Seriously. I think that's starting to have an impact. Okay? Yes, granted, it took a while for it to have that impact. But it had the impact that we wanted it to see, that we've been, and I think HRC has said, okay, we see the writing on the wall. We know that if we don't get on board, we're going to be left behind. So we're going to get on board. I think that's what's going on here in writ large. And granted, they have to do it in a way that's, you know, big and media friendly, and well, that's what HRC does, and that's okay. Because we could use some big, and we can use some media friendly right now. I think they've seen the writing on the wall. I mean, and I think they realize that having Laverne Cox keynote your gala in Washington is not going to impress people. I mean, don't get me wrong. Everybody loves Laverne. But nobody loves the Human Rights Campaign. People are done giving HRC the benefit of the doubt because they have a nice party. That ship sailed decades ago. No, now you actually got to do stuff. You got to actually do stuff now. And I think that's what HRC has come to understand. And I think that is hopefully, what we're going to see as Chad makes his appearance at SoCo. I think he's going to, and I believe, because I don't believe these people are fools. Again, I think they are going to have, I think they're going to have something to say. I think they're not going to show up empty-handed. Now, all right, moving on. We're gonna move on because, you know, we got left? About 45 minutes. All right, well, here's one thing. I thought this was interesting. The city of Orlando, as in Orlando, Florida, as in Disney World. Orlando unanimously approves transgender non-discrimination protections. This comes to us from BuzzFeed, Tody Merovic. Apparently, the Orlando City Council, led by their mayor, Buddy Dyer, voted 7-0 to approve an amendment to the city's human rights ordinance that adds gender identity as a protected class in areas of housing, employment, and public accommodations. Previously, the ordinance included protections on the basis of sexual orientation, among race, sex, religion, you know, in other words, it was gays only, everybody else, trans people, take a walk. So, for the first time, all the citizens of Orlando are now protected from discrimination. And let's see, Gina Duncan, who is a transgender advocate out there, says, we've completed the connectivity in the sense that the transgender community is running to catch up on equal rights. Orlando is a great example of where we've been successful in catching up so that everyone has the same protections and same rights across the spectrum of the LGBT community. Well, I don't know if I... everyone has the same protections and the same rights. Well, same rights, maybe. Same protections, well, I think we've seen that that's not always the case. Anybody who compares, for example, the example of the Cliven Bundy situation, remember that? Where they went, the federal government went there to try and, repossess his farm or something, and, all those armed white people with guns saying, come and take it, and they were all, training their guns on officers, and the federal government backed off. Remember that? With Cliven Bundy, and they were all crowing about it. We made the government back down, rah, 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 rah. Right? Now compare that to Ferguson, Missouri, where the cops go in there with fucking tanks and tear gas and rubber bullets for unarmed protesters. Oh, wait, I know why. Because they're black. Yeah. Because of their fucking skin color. I mean, it's fucking offensive. I mean, really, you know, and what's interesting is I give the governor of Missouri credit because at least he had the common sense to realize what was going on there. I mean, this was total bigotry. I was watching this thing last night, a live broadcast on MSNBC, and they're firing tear gas canisters. I mean, they are literally filling the streets with this crap. I mean, it was looked like Gaza. Looked like fucking Gaza. I mean, unbelievable. And this is a street, unarmed people firing these things into neighborhoods with children. Unbelievable. Well, the governor finally said he took it out of the hands of the county police department and turned it over basically to the state police, the highway patrol, and to the federal government. Turned over to handling the situation, which is probably the smart move for him. Because these guys didn't give a fuck. They come out there in like their military gear with their fucking commando outfits and SWAT outfits with the riot helmets and all this crap. You know, I mean, it was obvious. It was so obvious. They just wanted it. They didn't give a fuck. They were just firing, you know. When you have a police department that has 53 members, three of them are black, and your population is 83% black, do you think maybe there's a representation issue there? I mean, gee, why would those folks be upset? Gee, why would trans people be upset that they've got one trans board member on the Human Rights Campaign 50-member board? Why would you be upset about that? I mean, yeah, parallels? Yeah, you bet. Okay? I mean, seriously, because when people don't feel represented by their government or by their advocates, this is what happens. Whether it's trans people standing outside your gala with signs chanting, or whether it's your neighborhood uniting to say, we do not accept this. We do not accept our children being shot down in the street and being made to lie there for 4 hours. Disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. I think you're seeing very similar thing motivated here. And you know who I give the most credit to for that? I give it to Laverne Cox. I give it to Janet Mock. And those ladies said when they were treated badly on television, when they were disrespected, they stood up and they said, no, you will not. You will not treat me that way, not without having to answer for it. I thought the way Laverne Cox handled Katie Couric, awesome, perfect, absolutely perfect. Same thing with Carmen Carrera. She was absolutely classy, absolutely 100% right to say what she did. Janet Mock, awesome. I mean, I love that woman. I think she walks on water. I'm sorry, I do. I'm a writer. I'm writing my memoir. She's written an awesome memoir. Yes, I kind of have a little bit of a fanship there because of who I am. Okay, I admit it. Okay, but yeah, I think she's awesome. I think she's amazing. And I especially think it's amazing the way she handled Piers Morgan afterwards. And the way, not only just the way she handled it, but the way that the trans community, and we didn't see this with Laverne, because I think the feeling is Laverne is such a star, a celebrity, like not a movie star, but a television star, and it almost puts her into a different category. You know, I mean, maybe that's not fair. I don't know. I don't know. But I think public perception wise, Laverne Cox is at a higher point. I mean, she's been on the cover of Time. You know, it's like these days you see an article about trans people, her picture is on the cover. I think she's almost in a class by herself at this point. But so is Janet Mock. I mean, how many trans people have ever had a book that sold that well? Maybe Jenny Boylan. I'm not sure. I mean, I know Jenny's books have sold really, really well. But I don't know. I don't know. But Janet, in addition, she's young. She's beautiful. She appears on television. You know, I have a special affection for her in the sense that I think she represents the community not only as a representative in the media very, very well, but also as an activist. I mean, don't forget she was responsible for the hashtag Girls Like Us. I think she's done an incredible, incredible, incredible job. And most importantly, I think these ladies stood up and said, no, we will not be treated like this anymore. And so other trans women, including, I might add, myself, although I've never had a problem standing up to these people, but I was inspired as well. Okay? A lot of the rest of us started standing up and saying, you know what? I'm not putting up with this shit anymore either. you will treat me with respect. You will treat my sisters with respect, or we will shred you for it. We will call you out. We are tired of accepting this crap as the status quo, and we won't stand for it anymore. We will not stand idly by when a rich, self-centered, gay drag queen starts throwing slurs around and claiming he has the right to do so because he's been around that long. Sorry, not good enough. We will hurt you. We will make you persona non grata. We will cost you money. We will cost you viewers. We will cost you page views. We will cost you attention. We will turn the tide against you publicly. We will make you uncomfortable for people to watch and listen to. We will cut into your bottom line. Okay? And I'll tell you the truth. I believe that we did that successfully with RuPaul, and I believe we did it successfully with Piers Morgan. Okay, now, Piers Morgan, it should be noted, was on his way out. His ratings, long before he ever had Janet on, his ratings were in the toilet. There were rumors about his, you know, I'm a media reporter, so we do hear things like that, although I wasn't a media reporter at the time this was happening. But you hear things. The rumors were already circulating that Piers Morgan's show was circling the drain and that he was due to be replaced. So this was not exactly a shocker. But I think, I believe, and of course, again, no way of knowing this, supposition on my part, but my guess is this was just the last straw for Piers Morgan. Because CNN has done some excellent, excellent coverage on trans people and issues. Anderson Cooper, some others, have done some excellent work. Their website, I did a video with them at one point. Great, great stuff. Very good stuff. In fact, I would even argue that CNN, up until recently, was the clear leader over the big three. Now, of course, you can't even count Fox. Fox covers us more than anybody else, but they cover us to bash us. The problem is that the network that's supposed to be the left-leaning one hardly covers us at all. And so what most viewers get is they get bash, 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 favorable. Bash, 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 favorable. Bash, 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 favorable, favorable. And then all of a sudden, something like Laverne Cox hits, or Janet, or something else hits, favorable, 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 you know what I mean? But that, unfortunately, those things don't last, because this is the culture, and things pass through the culture over time. Now, fortunately, Laverne Cox is really good, she's up for an Emmy, she's in the news. Janet, I mean, had, but look at Janet in comparison. Laverne Cox is still in the news. Janet had this huge moment where she had the Piers Morgan thing. She had a huge moment when her book was released, which was just before that, and she made the New York Times bestseller list. She had a huge moment when she joined Marie Claire. Now it's kind of, you know, her, you haven't seen her in a few weeks. Although she appeared on this local, I don't know if it's a local, it's an online show or something. It's hosted by this guy, Jake, I forget his last name, Sokoloff or something, and Meghan McCain, who, oh my God. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's not because she's a Republican, but my God, this woman is like, you she can make your ears bleed. I mean, she talks like this all the time, and they're yelling at each other. It's like, God. I mean, I realize, okay, this is supposed to be a show for millennials. I mean, you know, I know some millennials. They don't talk like that. I mean, she sounds like she's, like, just screeching after a while. I couldn't tell her. You know, I did an article on Janet Mock for The Advocate where I had to watch this show, and I was like, oh, my God. I was, like, getting through that show. It's like ice pick in the... Those of you who remember Frank Zappa from back in the day, It's like the ice pick in the forehead. Yeah. Or more like ice pick in the ear canal. I mean, my God, this woman could shatter glass with that voice. I don't know. Maybe I'm too old for that shit. I guess. But I don't know. I don't know. I really don't know. But that was the kind of thing. She did that show, but that's it. That's all her. I mean, she's on a, I don't know what you would call it. A low, you know, and that's okay because that's what happens with these things. I mean, people who are celebrities or budding celebrities or pseudo celebrities or whatever, you know, your notoriety goes up, your notoriety goes down. You know, I mean, even at my level and at Parker's level and that level, it's the same thing. Your notoriety goes up, everybody's paying attention, then your notoriety goes down. It's up, it's down, it's up, it's down. And that's okay. It's what it is. And, you know, I mean, it's the nature of the business. But the reality is that we're there now. We're at this point where we can no longer be ignored. Love us, hate us, doesn't matter. You're not going to ignore us anymore. You're just not. And so, again, you know, dragging this all the way back to the Human Rights Campaign, although I didn't intend to go back here, but that's it. They are not dumb. They have seen the writing on the wall, and they understand what the implications are of continuing on the path that they were on. And they've obviously known this for a while, and I think this is something that that's been brewing for a while, okay? Because, and the reason I say that, is because with the Human Rights Campaign, nothing happens quickly. Think of them like a gigantic cruise ship. They cruise along very, very slowly, but when it's time for them to make a turn, when it's time for them to alter course in some way, it takes forever because they are so big and so slow and so ponderous that, you know, it can take a year for them, you know. I think that's what it's about. It can take that long for them to catch up. And that's what I think it is. I think what's going on now is, as I said earlier, I think that flag incident in front of the Supreme Court was a wake-up call for them. I think somebody around the top offices said, you know what, we got to do something about this. Because we can't get away with this crap anymore. Not if we want to remain relevant. I think they understand that. And I think that's what's driving this. And you know what? That's okay. There's nothing wrong with wanting to remain relevant, with wanting your organization to survive. Nothing wrong. Is perfectly commendable. What will have to be is not just words, but follow up. That's what they need. And you know what? I believe this. I believe they can do it. I think they have the right people in place. They need more of those people, but I think they are choosing the right people as they do this. I think they are acting as if they're serious, which I will tell you is something that I have not seen from them previously. Usually when HRC goes through one of these things, you say, yeah, sure, right, okay, well, if they were for real, they'd have been doing this, and they'd been doing that, and they'd been doing the other thing, and da-da-da-da. Well, you know, I'm not saying those things anymore. Or at least I'm not saying them at the moment. And that's a departure for the human rights campaign. It's not in character. They are the way they are behaving currently over the last 8 to 10 months, let's say, is very out of character for the HRC that most of us have been interacting with for the last decade to 15 years. It's totally out of character for them to go and send somebody like Chad Griffin into a situation where they know that this guy is going to face a disbelieving audience. In fact, I would even go so far to say a hostile audience. Seriously. I don't believe HRC would set up their own president for that. Given, and here's why, given what happened after the Salmanese debacle, I think they've learned. Okay, I don't think it's that they wouldn't throw Chad to the wolves if they thought that it would protect their executive board. Oh, I don't believe that for a microsecond. I think they would do it, and they would do it happily, just like they did it with Joe Salmanese. They are perfectly happy to use their president as a fire shield for themselves. Totally have no trouble believing that. But I also think they're conscious of what happened and how horribly it backfired on them the last time they tried that shit. And so I don't think they would do that. And furthermore, I don't believe that they want that, because I think they understand that it's like it's either four letters or no letters. It's either get with the program or be left behind. And I think they understand that. I do. I it's taken them decades to get there, but if we don't allow for the possibility that people can change, that organizations can change, that culture can change, that attitudes can change, that hearts and minds can change. If we don't believe that in our hearts, that we can affect, that we can change hearts and minds, even if it takes us a decade or more, if we don't believe that that's possible, what the fuck are we doing out here? I think we have to believe that. I do. I think we have to operate from a position not of faith in the human rights campaign, but a position of faith in the nature of change and in the culture and in evolution and in social and political progress, and that we can be the catalyst for that progress. I believe, I think we have to. I think it is a core belief of being an activist, of being a trans activist in particular. I think we have to, because if we don't, then what are we doing? What are we bothering for? I think we have to accept that. And if we accept that, we can change the hearts and minds of politicians. If we accept that we can change the hearts and minds of, let's say, those who oppose us, who are these bathroom freak idiots, okay? And we are. And it's working. And we're winning. If we don't allow for that, if we don't say, well, if they can do it, so can the human rights campaign, I think it's a betrayal of our base values as activists. I think we have to let them try. And I think we have to allow them to succeed, if they do succeed. That does not mean that we have to give them credit where credit is not due. It does not mean that we have to look the other way if and when they screw up. It does not mean that we have to be extra charitable or extra forgiving or willing to look the other way if they make a mistake. It doesn't. But it does mean, I think, that we have to be willing to stand there and say, okay, you say you're on our side now, HRC? You say that things are different? Prove it. And I don't mean tell us. I mean prove it. Show us. Don't tell us. Show us. You know, those of you who are a certain age, remember the old movie Jerry Maguire? Show me the money. That's what we need right now. Show us the money. Show us the manpower. Show us the political capital. Show us what a truly trans-inclusive and supportive human rights campaign looks like. Show us. Prove to us that you're on our side. Don't just say it. Don't just say it. Because if that's what you do, if you go in there and you say, well, take it on faith because we, you know, we're HRC and we're saying this and you should just believe what we tell you because we're HRC and this is what it is. That is going to come across as exactly the way people perceive HRC today. Arrogant, self-centered, clueless about the community, unwilling to take the steps that they need to take. The fact is, HRC has been wronging this community, has been mistreating this community for decades. You don't get a pass on that. You have to own up. You have to make amends. Again, does not mean that you have the reparations. That crap is ridiculous. It's not about reparations in the classic sense. Nobody's expecting HRC to write a check like that. But we are expecting you to spend money to say, okay, we were wrong. We won't do it anymore. And watch how we do things today. We are changing, and we are going to do it in full view of the community. We are not going to operate independently as if we're the only organization. We are going to go and we are going to do things with the community. We are going to promote the community. We are going to allow the community to dictate to us rather than the other way around what's needed, where it's needed, when it's needed. You know, it's time for HRC to let trans people say jump, and for HRC to ask how high. That's what you need. It's time for you to be the solution, not the problem. And the way to do that is not to say, okay, we're here, we're in charge, we're HRC, well, everybody line up behind us, because that's not going to fly anymore. Nobody's going to line up behind people they can't trust. What it needs to happen is for HRC to say, okay, we're here, where do you want us? How can we help? How can we make what you're working on easier? Where do we put our men and women? Where do we put our money? Where do we put our political influence? Tell us what you need, and we will support you. That's the way it has to work. Because if they come in like they own the place, and like it was like years and years ago, that's not going to fly. People are just going to say, oh, same old HRC. Same old HRC, wanting to run everything, wanting to take credit for everything. Bullshit. Nobody believes it. Let's move on. Well, you know what? That's not going to fly anymore. HRC has to rethink and rework the way they interact with the community and say, we are a member of the team, okay? And they have to understand that team leadership roles have to be earned. They cannot be demanded. They cannot be purchased. They must be earned. In order to be considered a leader, you have to lead. And leading does not begin with your checkbook. Leading begins with people. Leading begins with honesty. Leading begins with working in coalition. Leading means bringing people to where you are, getting people to work together for the common good, not getting everybody to just subscribe to the desires and the interests of a single organization. Okay? And if HRC pulls its, well, if we're not in charge and we can't do everything we want, we're taking our ball and going home, they pull that crap again like they did in the past, they're done. Done. I don't care how much money they invest. They're done. They need to be humble. They need to be listeners. They need to say, what do you need? How can we help? What can we do? How can we use our power and influence to make your lives easier? That's what they need to do. And, you know, I'll tell you, I mean, that's tough. It's got to be tough for the Human Rights Campaign, who used to doing all that stuff, to being leaders. Well, you know what? No, not in this case. You don't get to be leaders here. You get to be followers. You get to be supporters. You get to say, okay, trans community, what do you want from us? How do we help? And I will tell you, we've got plenty of great activists fighting. I mean, there's plenty of places we could use that HRC money, that HRC activism. New York, New Hampshire, Wisconsin. I could go on and on. There are plenty of places. And that's what I think. And I also think that I would not say, nor would anybody I know suggest that they should just all of a sudden stop supporting marriage. I don't think that's credible, and I don't think that's advisable. I don't think that's a good thing. I wouldn't support that. If HRC announced tomorrow that, oh, well, we're not going to be doing anything on marriage anymore, we're going to be only focused on other issues, I wouldn't think that's a good idea either. I think we need to focus on all of them. I think HRC needs to adopt a more holistic approach. And by that, what I mean is that these things are all interconnected. That, yeah, you need marriage rights in order to get married. But in order to have a family, a successful family, you need a job. And that requires employment rights. And you need a place to live. And that requires housing rights. And you need to be able to go to the doctor when you get sick, even if you're transgender, and that's about health care. I mean, it's about taking a more holistic approach and saying that everybody has a stake here, everybody is in it together, and you don't throw the little guy under the bus. Ever, ever, ever. You model the inclusion you're demanding from the greater society. And that is exactly the problem with HRC, is more than any other single thing, I think, the one thing that they have to address, and the one thing that people are more upset about the Human Rights Campaign about than any other single thing, and even though there's like all different kinds of actions and events and misbehavior and yada, 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 all that stuff. But above all, they all, most of the most important things link back to hypocrisy. It's okay for me, but it's not okay for you. To say, we demand inclusion from the greater American society, but we're not going to model that inclusion to the trans community. And you know what? Politicians notice that shit. Politicians notice when you spend millions of dollars in New York State and win marriage, and then the minute marriage is done, poof, gone. Where's HRC now? Where's the Empire State Pride Agenda now? Now they all throw up their hands and say, well, you know, gee, there's nothing we can do now. Yeah, they won't listen to us now. It's like, well, you know what? If you guys weren't fucking selfish assholes 10 years ago and 5 years ago and 2 years ago, you know. So, I mean, I was talking to an activist last week on Facebook. I respect this guy. I respect him a lot. But he was like saying to me, well, you know, we can't do anything now. It's like, yeah, I know, because you used up all your fucking political capital. And you selfish bastard. But it certainly didn't prevent you from treating Andrew Cuomo like he walked on water at this year's Pride event. Right? So this is what happens, okay? When you get, oh, we'll come back for you later. Then it's like, oh, well, sorry, too bad, so sad. Yeah, no, now we can't do anything because, well, we used up all our political juice getting what we wanted for ourselves. Sorry. That's the lesson of New York State. That's the lesson of New Hampshire. You want to really do some good, HRC? You want to impress people, HRC? Start there. Start making it politically unpalatable for an Andrew Cuomo to turn his back on the trans community. Start using your political influence to say to New York senators that there will be a price to pay for failing to vote on the Gender Expression Non-Discrimination Act, GENDA. Talk to the folks in New Hampshire. Use that media influence and that political influence that you like to brag of and use it to make real change. You want to impress us, HRC? That's the way to do it. That's the way to do it. Show us something. Be out. Be vocal. Change the narrative. Change your narrative. You want us to change our narrative about you? Then you, HRC, have to change your narrative about us. No more excuses. No more bullshit. No more mealy-mouthed double talk. There is no more negotiation. This is it. I mean, you are putting everything on the line here, HRC. You are. They are putting everything on the line here in terms of PR. They fuck this up, it's over for another generation. Nobody will believe a word they have to say. Nobody. Nobody. Okay? I think they understand this. I think they understand. I really do. I think they understand this. And I think I respect their courage. I do. I respect the courage that it took for them to say, you know what? We're going to do it. We're going to go before another 1,000 trans people and we're going to talk and we're going to send our president and we're going to do this again, knowing the kind of reception that he's going to get. Knowing that we have so much to prove to these people. Knowing what has gone on and how these people think about our organization. I give them credit. I do. I think that took balls. I think it's ballsy. And, you know, that that more than anything else, for me, that impressed the shit out of me. Because ballsy is not a word I've traditionally used to describe the human rights campaign. I don't think anybody of us have ever used that word. I mean, offensive, you know, a lot of those kind of words, the negative words. But ballsy? No. I think this is ballsy. I do. I think it takes guts to go up and say, okay, we're going to talk to you. I'm going to get up on a stage in front of all you people that our organization has fucked over for decades, and I'm going to talk to you. Even in light of the fact that the guy who replaced me, the guy I replaced in this job, lied to your faces 7 years ago from this very same podium. And I'm going to go up there. Okay, so I have respect for Chad for doing that. And I have respect for HRC for sending him, because you know, okay, again, I say this all the time on the air, but I want to make sure that this is clear, because we're almost out of time here. But I want to make clear, Chad is not the president of the Human Rights Campaign in the same way as Barack Obama is president of the United States. He doesn't have that kind of power. He doesn't set policy for the Human Rights Campaign the way Barack Obama sets policy for the United States federal government. He serves at the pleasure of the HRC executive board. They can can him for anything they want. They can just say, hey, dude, not working out. You're fired. Have a nice life. We'll pay off your contract. Goodbye. Seriously. It is absolutely within their rights. Chad is not the leader of the organization. He is a figurehead. He is a spokesperson. He is not the person with the ultimate authority in that organization. The executive board is. And that's why I say that he could not have done this. You know, Chad doesn't one day decide, I'm going to go speak in front of 1,000 trans people. That had to be done with the approval of that executive board, I guarantee you. And so I give them credit for that. It's, you know, it's important. And I think we need to acknowledge that, and to acknowledge the reality of what that is. Okay, and that's why I say I do not believe that they would be doing this at all if they weren't ready to show us something. I think the easiest thing for them to do would be nothing, to just keep their mouths shut, to do absolutely nothing. That would be their best choice. If all they wanted to do was bullshit us, or just keep doing what they're doing, or just keep being focused on marriage, it would be very easy. Just stop talking. But they haven't done that. I think that matters. I think it makes a difference. I think we shouldn't trust them. But I do think we need to start paying attention. And we need to follow this closely and watch them like hawks. I hope we will. All right. We are done for tonight. It is the Rebecca Juro Show. Thank you for tuning in. As always, thank you for supporting this media. We will catch you next week. Yes, there will be a show next week. We will catch you then. And, just have a good night. Have a good night, everybody.